yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and earned a bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Notre Dame. She was the first woman to dive competitively on the men's Notre Dame varsity swim team and went on to become a two-time All-American. She and her husband, Mike, have hosted four different children receiving treatment at local hospitals through a program entitled Healing the Children. Her name, Betsy Bernard. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible. And we're talking to a spectacular, most unique lady, Betsy Bernard. Betsy, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. I'm delighted to be with you.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad and growing up in Cincinnati?
Sure. I had a wonderful childhood. I grew up in a family of five children. Betty and Fritz were my parents. They raised us beautifully, taught us our faith, a lot of family love, a really tight family. Lots of fun.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Well, I would have to say the biggest thing I learned from my mom, and my dad played a part, of course, too, was my faith. She really taught me my faith and shared hers with me and helped me develop my own.
And your dad?
And my dad, I wish I learned more from him. He was really a brilliant, charming, wonderful man. And if I could be a lot more like him, I would be a better person. He was awesome.
They say that a woman grows up, falls in love with a man like her dad. So are you saying all those same things about Mike too?
Oh, yes, definitely.
All right. They call Cincinnati the City of Seven Hills. Tell us about Cincinnati.
Cincinnati is a wonderful, wonderful city. I loved it, and I miss it still to this day. It's kind of a small town with a big feel, or vice versa. I mean, I'm not sure I'm saying it right, but has all the things to offer of a very large metropolitan city without the hassles. You know, you can get anywhere in 20 minutes. There's lots of good culture, good professional sports teams, but a great community spirit.
Speaking of professional sports teams, you had Sparky Anderson and the Big Red Machine before Sparky Anderson.
That's right. I remember going to the World Series when we played the Red Sox. I think I was in high school. The Big Red Machine, it was awesome.
All right. Where did you get your love for swimming and diving?
Oh, gosh. It developed throughout my childhood. All of my brothers and sisters, I was the fourth in my family, and we all were swimmers, and we all spent all day, every day at the local swim club, starting there at 7:30 in the morning for swim practice and staying until my dad picked us up on his way home from work at 5:30 or something. We were there all the time, and we had a great community there and had a lot of fun. My parents also had a trampoline in our backyard, and that's basically where I learned some skills that equated to diving. You know, if you could do flips on a trampoline, it was very transferable to a diving board. So that's how I started with the diving. And my older brother, Fritz, who was 3 years ahead of me, was also a diver. So the two of us, actually my sister Joan was also one, but she didn't pursue it as much as Fritz and I did.
What do all the great divers in the world have in common?
Ooh, maybe a lot of discipline, perseverance, maybe some athletic ability, of course. That's what I would say.
All right. In 1977, you go to Notre Dame. How was it you got to Notre Dame?
Well, my father went to Notre Dame, and my brother was a current student there. And so I had been brought up with a Notre Dame, you know, cheering for the Irish, watching the football team, watching the basketball team. I remember the day that the basketball team broke the streak of UCLA. You know, I remember watching that game in my home with my family. So there was a lot of Notre Dame affiliation in my family. And so when it was time for me to apply to college, I just applied to Notre Dame at St. Mary's. And like I said, my brother was there in South Bend. So I kind of was hoping to be there with him. And I got into St. Mary's right away. And I didn't, you know, I was not a great student. I was a decent student, but I wasn't a great student like you have to be today to get in. So I didn't really think I'd get into Notre Dame. So I had my dorm picked out and my money in to St. Mary's when that nice big envelope came in, you know, the end of March or early April, saying that I had been admitted to Notre Dame. And I remember going to my father and saying, geez, Dad, you know, Notre Dame's a lot more expensive than St. Mary's. What if I just want to be a mom? And I'll never forget my father who responded, I can think of nothing better to invest in. What a beautiful thing for an 18-year-old girl to hear.
There was a man at Notre Dame, an iconic man named Father Theodore Hesburgh. Some would say the greatest university president in America in the last 100 years. Tell us about Father Ted.
Well, I didn't know him personally, but of course I was very aware of him and his legacy. And he was very accessible to the students. His office was on the second or third floor of a building, and there was a fire escape, the ladder or whatever, that you could get to it. And he was very willing to entertain people, you know, students who wanted to go talk to him at 1 o'clock in the morning. I never took advantage of that myself, but, you know, he opened up Notre Dame to women. So that was huge for people like me.
That was in 1971. Prior to that, it was boys only.
Right.
Controversial decision for many. Talk about that decision and the courage it took.
Oh, gosh, that was huge. Right. It took a lot of courage because there were not a lot of people that supported that, especially alumni. But hearing him speak in the past, you know, he knew that everyone was going to get a better education if both genders were represented. And so he knew that it would be a much better university if it included women. And he stuck to his guns. And many of us are grateful for that.
Speaking of women, we're talking to Betsy Bernard. And in 1977, when she went to Notre Dame, there were 4 men to every woman. When we come back, we're going to ask her about that joy in life. And I'm Jack Rizzullo, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rizzullo, and we're with Betsy Bernard. Betsy and her husband, Mike, have hosted 4 different children internationally receiving treatment at local hospitals through a program called Healing the Children. Betsy, 1977, 4 guys for every woman, utopia.
I don't know about utopia, but the odds were good. The odds were good.
Did you have really every other night?
No, there was not a lot of dating that went on. Much more group going out, you know, girls and guys going out or going to dorm parties and stuff like that. There was not really a lot of one-on-one dating. There wasn't much going on in South Bend in those days. And nobody had any money, you know, we were just students. So it was mostly, you know, drinking beer in the dorms.
Speaking of not much going on in those days, Notre Dame did not have a women's varsity swim team. So you go out for the men's diving team and you make it. How'd you do it?
They were needy. I was always enjoyed athletics and competition throughout my life. So when I went to Notre Dame, I was hoping to pursue some kind of athletics. And because women had not been at Notre Dame all that long, the athletic programs had not really developed very well yet at that point. So when I first got there, the first sport to come available was volleyball. And there was the club team. And I learned about the tryouts coming up. So I went to that. And it was not very well organized, and the coach wasn't super knowledgeable, and I didn't feel like it was something that was going to be beneficial. It wasn't, it was just going to be more of a waste of time, I felt. There was a basketball team that was well organized and had a great coach, but I wasn't great at basketball. It wasn't really my favorite sport, so I passed on that. I'm sure I could not have made the team anyway. And then the next thing to come available was swimming. And I had been a swimmer and a diver. However, in high school, my high school did not have a swim team or a diving team. And so I was playing other sports like volleyball and basketball there. So I was mostly a summer diver, but I did continue to practice, and I had a private coach. My parents thought I had some potential, and so I would practice a couple of days a week in the first couple of years of high school, but I'd never attended any meets or anything, so I wasn't enjoying any competition, and I thought it was, just sort of a waste of my parents' money. So I said to them, I think we should just stop this. There's no point to it. So we did. After 2 years of high school, I stopped diving, and I concentrated on the other team sports, which were a lot of fun at my high school. And then when I got to Notre Dame and swimming came up next, my brother was a senior on the swim team and he was a diver. And there were two senior divers on the team and none younger. So they needed some divers, and there was no women's team. And with the encouragement of my parents, I decided to try out because they needed divers. So I did, even though I hadn't been diving in a couple of years, I was not at the top of my game at all. I made the team. There was me and one other guy who tried out, who was also a freshman diver. And so I really wasn't all that great at that point, but I decided to try out. And because they had no other divers, they took us both. So that began my affiliation with the men's swim team at Notre Dame.
Well, saying that you had some potential and you began slowly, you did become a two-time All-American while at Notre Dame. Talk a little bit about your diving career at Notre Dame.
Well, like I said, I kind of refreshed my abilities in my first year as a freshman. It was a swim team. There was not really a dedicated diving coach. The swim coach was was also our coach, but he didn't have an expertise in diving. He was a wonderful man, and he was open to having a woman on his team, which really was very broad-minded of him. So anyway, I worked my first year, kind of just building my skills back up, basically. And we coached each other, the members of the team. We just sort of helped each other as we worked out. So I went to a couple of meets. I didn't really make the travel squad, but I, got my skills back in line a little bit. And then at the end of that year, my brother graduated and he came back to Notre Dame to go to law school. And then they hired him as our diving coach. So now we did have a dedicated coach, and then my improvement was accelerated quite a bit, and I got a lot better, and I made the travel team, and I traveled to all the meets. It was always a little bit of an issue of where I would stay and what locker room I would use, because often the home team used the men's locker room and the visiting team got the ladies' locker room. And then I'd walk in and they'd be like, "Ooh, you want to change in my office, honey?" So how that went, but it, my skills got much improved, you know, due to the fact that my brother was my coach. He was an excellent coach. So, I got a lot better. I think I won the most improved award that year. And, I did a lot better. It was a lot of fun.
We better say he was an excellent brother too, Betsy. Okay.
Oh, so. Definitely.
All right. You got a bachelor's degree in business administration from University of Notre Dame. And then you join IBM, which back in that day, that was the cat's meow. Talk about your 15-year career at IBM.
Well, when I got out of Notre Dame in 81, there was a bit of a recession. So I didn't really have a job as I graduated. But I was able to, through some family connections, get hired on as what they call the supplemental. It was full-time, but it wasn't a full-time. I didn't have benefits. It was like an independent contractor, so to speak. So I worked there for a few months, and then there were some openings, and I got hired. I was in a sales branch. I did administrative kind of work, entering orders, collecting money, et cetera. And I guess I did pretty well because I was fairly quickly promoted to management. And I had a lot of different jobs. In the regional office and in the sales office, never in sales myself, but I did well and I got in the stock plan and I enjoyed that very much. I finally was promoted to Detroit as a second line manager. They called it a business operation manager. I was responsible for everything in the sales office other than sales. So payroll, telephones, lights, secretaries, contracts, everything other than sales. And I enjoyed it very much. I gained a lot of confidence. I moved to Detroit. My boyfriend lived here. We got engaged and got married. And it was a really nice time in my life.
We're talking to Betsy Bernard. Mike and her eventually had three sons. And in 2006, God decided he had a special plan for the Bernard family. When we come back, we're going to talk about that plan. And I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasoola. We're with Betsy Bernard. Betsy, it's 2006. You and Mike have three sons. Jack is 14, Rudy's 11, Mikey's 9. Life is good. And God decides that he wants you to get involved with healing the children. How did that come about, Betsy?
Well, the house next door to us sold, and a wonderful woman named Janie Livingston moved in next door, and she was very involved with healing the children. She had hosted several children throughout her married life, and she was very dedicated to it. And I was a stay-at-home mom, and we saw what Janie was doing, and my husband Mike said, we could do that. And we all know what that meant, because that meant I was the one who was going to do it. But of course, we did it together. And I needed that push. I was really, you know, I was nervous about it. But I was like, you are right, honey. We got to show these kids how to live their faith. And we have a very blessed life. And I'm home. And I could manage another child. So we signed up for the program. And the first little girl we got, whose name was Shahina, and she came from Uzbekistan, and she had a cleft palate. And I was very nervous, very, very nervous about taking this child on. But I probably wasn't as nervous as her mother, who had the gumption and had the sacrificial love to send her daughter away to be healed, as she couldn't have been healed where they were, because the procedures were not as well advanced and defined in Uzbekistan as they were here. So Shahina arrived in the fall of 2006, and she was just the sweetest little thing in the whole world. She was very small. She was probably a little malnourished because she really couldn't eat very well with a hole in the roof of her mouth. But she arrived and we saw a wonderful doctor, Dr. McCormick, and he did the surgery to fix it up. And she, you know, healed up beautifully and was just the sweetest little thing ever. We loved having her.
All right. The mission of Healing the Children is that they're an international non-for-profit organization dedicated to helping underserved children around the world secure the medical care they desperately need to live more fulfilling lives. They've been around for 41 years. They've helped 300,000 children. And in 2019 alone, they helped 13,000 children. Betsy, eventually four families on Lincoln Road in Grosse Pointe participated. So your home and your street became a United Nations. What was that like?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was really, really amazing and wonderful. And it was just really great. We all helped each other. You know, Janie, like I mentioned, started it. I think maybe we had the next one. And there were two other families that signed on immediately thinking we can do that. And of course, we all helped each other when, you know, kids arrived and all the children in the neighborhood were excited and became friends with those kids. And it really, it was just a beautiful thing.
All right. You take this Shahina from Uzbekistan. The mom was a doctor. All right. And you have her for 4 months. Then you decide we're going to have a second one. Many of your family and friends had to think, you guys are crazy. What did you tell them?
I don't know. It was great. My kids loved it. Loved it. They loved having extra children. And they were certainly really great helpers to me in caring for these children. So I don't know. It just was working. And it was so beautiful. And it was difficult in certain ways. I used to say the hardest days were the day they came and then the day they left, because you were just so sad to send them off. You loved them. You built this bond and took care of them and loved those children. So it was really a great thing. You know, in many things, when you give, often you get a lot more in return than you actually give. And that's how we felt about healing the children.
All right. Speaking of giving, God gave you a second one, Sammy, 2 years old, from Saigon in Vietnam. Talk about Sammy.
Sammy was a sweet little boy also. He was 2 years old when he arrived, and his left leg, he didn't have a foot or an ankle. His left leg sort of ended in the kind of the calf area, and it had a little appendage off the end of it. So that little appendage had to be removed, and then he had to be fitted for a prosthetic. So Dr. Christopher Lee took care of him, and he was such a little cutie, Sammy. My kids were enrolled at St. Paul at the time, and I used to go to the morning masses when they were there. So I would carry Sammy, because obviously he couldn't walk, and up to communion. And so all the kids in the church were familiar with these extra children that we had. And one of my favorite memories about Sammy was that I would carry him up and go to communion and then come back. And then after he had the surgery and he was fitted for the leg, the last week he was here, we walked up to communion together, hand in hand. And I could just see the amazement on all those little kids' faces that now here was this little boy and now he could walk for the first time. It was incredible. What a gift.
All right. You had him for 6 months. He taught you for 6 months. And then God gives you Melbean, 6 years old, from Honduras.
Melbean, he was a character, but he was a lot of fun. He had two pretty bad club feet. He was walking on sort of the outsides of his ankles, and his feet were turned in. He was 6 years old, and he was quite a little athlete because even in his little rubber boots, he beat me in soccer the day he arrived. And I took him to our local swim club, and he could swim, and he could get along fine on those feet as long as he was little. But as he grew and became a man, he was not, they were not structurally going to be able to carry him. So he went down to Children's Hospital, and Dr. Jones fixed him up, and it was rough. I will say that was very rough. It was a very painful surgery, and it was hard getting him through that. It was difficult, but anyway, he did, and we had a lot of fun with him. My kids were playing Little League baseball, and one of them was going through the, you know, the playoffs, and you know, on their way to, what's the name of the Little League championship? Anyway, my kid was on a great team, and he made friends with all the other kids on the team and all the siblings of the kids on the team. And we had a great time with him. He was here 6 months, and he knew everybody in the neighborhood. He was a player. A lot of fun.
God then gives you a fourth, Jose, 4 years old, also from Honduras. Pretty tough situation. Tell us about Jose.
Jose came with a colostomy bag. He had Hirschsprung's disease, and he was a delightful little boy. No language issue. He spoke English. His mother was an English teacher, and he went to a bilingual school. So that was very helpful. But the colostomy thing was not really something that anyone would want to have to deal with too much. But we got through it. They reversed the plumbing, and he, learned how to relieve himself through the right channels. And he was a very bright little boy too, spoke great English. And the thing about him was my youngest son by then was, you know, probably 13 or something. And he had always been the baby of the family. But now with Jose here, he knew what it was like to not be the baby, and they teased each other a lot, and he learned to, you know, what it was like to have somebody younger than him. So that was a little broadening for him. It was great. He was a really nice young man.
We're talking to Betsy Bernard. If you want to learn more, www.htcforhealingthechildren, htcmichiganohio.org. When we come back, we're going to ask her, what's the biggest thing those four little angels from God taught her and Mike? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Betsy Bernard. She and her husband, Mike, have hosted four different children receiving treatment at local hospitals through a program entitled Healing the Children. Those four little angels from God, what's the biggest thing they taught you and Mike?
That all people are equally important. You know, everyone is a child of God and deserves love and blessings and everything else. And we learned to love those children, you know, just like our own. They were really a gift. It was a great experience.
Would you do it again, Betsy?
Yes. Yes, I would do it again. I would hesitate to bring a little toddler into my house or a young, you know, child like 5 or 6, because I don't have any children at home anymore for them to play with. But I would definitely take an infant, one that, you know, maybe didn't need as much other children to interact with. But it was really great. And, you know, another thing which I did not mention was our whole community came and became involved and helped. And, you know, as soon as a child would arrive, you'd send out an email saying, I got this 2-year-old little girl, because they never came with any clothes or anything like that. And all of a sudden the bags would arrive and people would be calling, can she come over and play? I've got a 5-year-old boy. Could she come over? Can he come over and play with my 5-year-old? And the whole community really embraced us and helped us with these children. And it really was a beautiful thing overall.
All right. We had lunch a few weeks ago, and I quote you, my number one goal as a mother is to instill in our 3 sons a strong faith. Why and how do you do that?
Well, why? Because that's what's most important. That's what I feel is most important anyway. And how? Well, we've done it, you know, we tried to do it the best we could by modeling our own faith for them. And we've sent them to Catholic schools so that they could learn their faith and be around others that also felt that that was most important or put that at the highest priority. You know, just little things, doing the Healing the Children program and getting involved in that, I think was showing them that, you know, everyone's important and everyone's equal in God's eyes. And you know, this world is just temporary. This is not our end game. So that's why you have to develop your faith and have a relationship with Jesus.
Let's go back to March 12th, 1999. God blesses you and Mike and the 3 boys with a little daughter, a sister, Mary. Tell us about Mary, please.
Mary was our 4th child and a huge blessing in our life. At 20 weeks of pregnancy, I was diagnosed, or she was diagnosed with a chromosomal disorder. It was called trisomy 18. And as the doctor told me, it was incompatible with life. Took me a few minutes to figure out what that meant. And so we knew that we weren't going to have her for very long. But I did have 20 more weeks of pregnancy to carry her and love her and take care of her as best I could. So we decided to do that. And then she was born and she was with us for 17 days, came home from the hospital and lived with us, and didn't exactly thrive or anything, but we got to love her and be with her for that short time. And then we named her Mary because we knew we were going to send her right back up to the main Mary. And that's what happened. We lost her after 17 days, but she was a huge blessing in our life because absolutely every person we know poured out love and support and concern for us and for her throughout those 20 weeks of pregnancy and 17 days of her life. And it was a huge blessing. And now I really know that I have my own little saint in heaven. And I talk to her frequently and pray to her and ask her to intercede for all of us.
All right. Someday you get to heaven, Betsy, and you will get to heaven, and Mary's there welcoming you. What are you going to say to her?
Oh, I love you. I'm going to rejoice. I'm going to rejoice. I really can't imagine it, but I'm sure I'll be on my knees and in awe.
If there's a mom listening tonight who's just lost an infant, son or daughter, and says, Betsy, I don't have your faith. Right now, I hate God. What do you say to that mom?
You just have to trust. You just have to trust. You have to trust in the Lord, because that's really the only thing that gets you through these challenges. And time heals, and you just have to trust.
You and Mike are shining examples of people that have let go and let God, trusting God. And when you let go and let God, he doesn't tweak, he transforms. God transforms. If there's a couple tonight fighting, they want to let go and let God, but they don't know how to do it, what do you say to them?
Pray. Pray. Let's talk to the Lord. Tell him what you need. He knows what you need already, but open up to him, and you will feel him. You will see things in your life, but as you reflect, you know you prayed about that, and maybe it didn't turn out how you wanted, but it did turn out. And he doesn't let you down. He has your back. If you pray and you build a relationship with the Lord, he will always be there for you.
Betsy Bernard, I admire you. We all admire you. Please keep up the great, great work.
Thank you. I've totally enjoyed this. Thanks for your time.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohem.